For those of you who don't know me, my name is Lisa Lorraine Smith. I'm the Chief Program Officer here at the network. And one of my roles, of course, is to run these affinity groups. And now we're calling them net groups, to run these net groups. And to do that, I could never do it alone. I have to rely on my chairs of this group. And the chairs of this group are Brenda Ewan from the Cumming Center in Montreal, and Anne Burke, who is at JFS in Cincinnati. And together, we decided that this would be an interesting topic. And I'm really looking forward to hearing what people are doing in this field. But I will let one of them begin the conversation. And if anyone else is new that didn't get to introduce themselves, hello, Mindy, you want to introduce yourself? And then they'll start. And where are you from?
Sure. I work with Eileen at Jewish Family and Children's Service of Southern New Jersey. And I am a geriatric social worker. And I also facilitate a support group for visually impaired seniors.
Well, that'll be something that we can talk about. Okay. So anyone else? Anyone else?
Eileen? Might have to go off video for a minute, but I'm still here.
Okay, so Eileen said she's new to this group.
I am. Hello, everybody. I am from Jewish Family Service in Metropolitan Detroit, and I am a geriatric case manager, and I've been here a little over 4 years.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, Alex, are you new?
Yes, I am. I'm trying to get my video to work and it's not happening. I work with Tatiana at Jewish Family Services in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. And I am a social work student. I'm with her for the summer. So, nice. Yes.
Lucky Tatiana. That's great.
Yeah, really.
Wonderful. Okay. So one of you take it away.
I think I'm going to kick it off. So as Lisa said, I'm Anne Burke from Cincinnati, Ohio, and we thought it would be interesting to have some conversation around aging and disabilities and see, you know, what each of you are doing or not doing in that case, not just folks with disabilities as they age, but also in terms of any intersection, you know, parents, of folks with aging parents with young members of their family or younger members of the family with disabilities. So, you know, we just wanted to open up and kind of round robin and see what everyone's kind of doing in that space of intersection there between those two, disabilities and aging. So anyone want to kick us off?
Well, I was thinking that Mindy might be a really good person to kick us off, just hearing what she's working with, because you specialize, you said, in visually impaired?
I do a monthly support group. Right now, everyone in the group is completely blind, but the group is for visually impaired. And it is interesting, as far as the intersection, I used to have a lot of speakers that were specific topics toward supporting them for being blind. And then I realized they also want to talk about banking and fraud and any senior related topics. So now we kind of try to do a mix of that. So I'll have somebody from the Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired, but then I'll have somebody from TD Bank. And they probably give the same talk they would give to any senior group. Some things have to be adjusted a little bit, but in general, they're talking to them about the challenges of, you know, aging in place.
So are
you do you find that they're more comfortable in the group because they're all visually impaired, and that they're able to maybe speak freer than if they were in a group with people who were not visually impaired?
I don't know about speaking freer, but they have expressed, especially during the 2 years of COVID, how important this group was. It was so, they got so much support from being in a group with people who completely understood their position right now. You know, the vulnerability they felt as a person without sight during COVID, or how they feel as a mom or a dad. So they do really get a lot from being with people who share their disability.
So Mindy, I'm curious, how did the group come about?
It's one of the support groups that we offer. We advertise it, and it's been going on. It was going on when I came, and I kind of inherited it. It's always been a monthly group. It was larger during COVID. We used to meet in person, and now we meet by conference call. So it's gotten a little bit smaller, which is okay, because it's very hard to manage a group that's just on the phone. So it's always been a group.
I have a question.
Yes. Sure.
Were these individuals blind from birth, or they became blind in older age, like macular degeneration or something?
Yes.
Like that?
We don't have anybody in the group, and I've never had anybody in the group, not that I wouldn't, but it's, everyone has become blind, mm-hmm. which is something that's
very
an
different.
Important distinction, and they share that.
Yeah.
You know, how that feels, because their role has changed in the eyes of their family and society too, is what they complain about a lot.
That's a great group to have, I think. And potentially
it's
not that difficult to create if you're in the field. I don't know. I don't want to make it sound simple, but it sounds like something that people would want to go to.
It's not that easy finding. My biggest challenge is getting speakers, not repeating speakers, because the group stays the same. They keep re-upping because we kind of do it in 6-month segments, but I've had the same group of people, clients, for 3 years. They keep rejoining. So I don't
maybe
really
you don't have to have speakers. You just, it's a support group.
We don't have speakers every time, but we do need speakers sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Sounds interesting. Anyone else doing anything like that? I know that the Kings Bay Y has a program for blind and deaf, and they do programming, and they presented it at the conference in the program showcase, and it's an interesting model as well.
I'll bet.
Mm-hmm. Mindy, I just had one question. Is it you that's facilitating this group, or do you have like a social worker?
I'm the social worker that's facilitating it.
Okay. And would you recommend, if somebody wanted to duplicate this kind of group, is that something that you'd recommend that a social worker would be the right person to do so? I think
versus what?
Okay. Versus just you know, like a program, a person that's just not a social worker, but a person who's just a facilitator, like somebody who does programming.
It depends on the person. I mean, I tell the people in my group, two of them, I say, you should be social workers. They could lead the group. And a lot of times, you know, you have peer-led groups. So I don't think you necessarily have to be a social worker. I think sometimes it helps that I'm a social worker.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the skills that I have.
You have to be a group worker.
Yeah.
Right.
But
so
I don't know.
Tatiana asked if it's only for the Jewish community.
No. In fact, the majority of members of my group are not Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
Of this particular group are not Jewish.
Love that. Okay, if you have any information, flyers or whatnot, how you advertise it, send it to me and I can put it in the resource library. And if anyone's interested, they can go and look and see how they've done that.
Okay, I will do that.
Terrific, Mindy, thank you. Okay, who else is doing something for their aging seniors?
I missed the question. I'm sorry. I'm the worst. Can you repeat it?
Hi. Good to see you again. Are you doing any programming for your seniors who have disabilities?
I think we have a disability program that Rachel was running. And, you know, there's a lot of crossover because she also does the Holocaust program. Right now, we're just trying to start the Care Navigators now that we're part of ALCA and stuff like that. It's just, that's the major focus. And, you know, many of them are disabled by, you know, healthcare issues and stuff like that, but no specific programming yet. You mean creative artistic programming?
We mean anything.
So I have stuff that I used to do for, you know, my older adults and memory care and everything. And, you know, I could share some of that, but we're getting going over here. We're starting a petite business.
So Ilanit is new to this group, and she's at the JFS of New Haven, and we met at the conference, and shared a cab, if you must know, and found out a lot about their agency, which is basically starting over again. And she is, I think I would call you the number two, right?
We're very
small, fluid. Team.
Huh? Yeah.
A small but mighty team.
Yes, yes. And so it's a new aging adult program, and we're really just mirroring the other people doing Jerry case management or aging life care. And I've been in touch with Malka, who's in Massachusetts. She's also at a JFS, mm-hmm. and she's running a great program. And then Karen, who's mm-hmm. also in Mass, who's, mm-hmm. you know, running the Supporting Your Elders program. So I've gotten a lot of support from those ladies.
All right. So is anyone running?
We have at Coming Center, we have a group. We have more than one group. We have a wellness department, and in the wellness department, we have an adapted wellness department. So we help people who are living with Parkinson's, people who have aphasia, post-stroke, people with dementia, Alzheimer's, and also our social workers, our social service team works with people who are suffering with mental illness. We used to have, we still do. It's a very interesting program. It's a specific program where we had to send our trainers to be trained. It's a boxing program for Parkinson's. And it's really, we had a gym before COVID. We had a gym and we trained the people in the gym how to work with our clientele. And I'm telling you, you think it's not easy. What they were doing in boxing, they were really boxing. Like, they would have to hit targets with their hands. They would have to do training with their feet. So with Parkinson's, a lot of it was spatial awareness as well. And we had volunteers that helped with supporting the people. People were clamoring for this when we were hit by COVID, and we were able to transfer a lot of that program onto a virtual platform.
Wow. Did she just freeze, or is that? So
during COVID, a lot of our, in the adapted classes, we were very concerned about them because, you know, the less you move, the more you kind of like seize up. And we wanted to maintain their health and their well-being. Am I frozen? I'm frozen.
We can hear you though,
Brenda. Hang on a second.
We can hear you. Keep on talking. Take your camera off.
Sorry, I know I'm frozen. Hang on a second. Let's see if I can do something with that.
Okay. Beth put in the chat from Boston about some of their programs as well.
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry I arrived late, so I'm just catching up. I'm just trying to glean what the question was that was put out to the group.
What are you doing in the intersection space of disabilities and aging? Mm-hmm. So while we're waiting on Brenda, Beth, do you want to share a little bit about what you guys are doing?
Sure. We've had a suite of programs for people living with Parkinson's for about 10 or 12 years. There's a choral group, there's a dance program, there's various networking and support groups, including caregiver support groups. And then almost as long as that, programs for people living with dementia, a monthly memory cafe, and we also run the National Memory Cafe Network, and then programs for family members as well. I'm trying to think anything else that fits in that category. We have a big care management practice, which I think is what Elenit was referencing. Karen Wasserman is at the helm of that.
Tell her I say hi.
Okay, I will.
And thank you.
Sure.
I'm sorry about that before, I lost my internet connection. Of course, it's always when you're talking, right? So
hold on for 1 second, Brenda. We'll get back to what you were talking about.
But sure.
Beth, what is the monthly memory group?
Is that a memory cafe? It's a social gathering for people living with dementia and family and friend. And I'll just put in the chat the link to the Percolator webpage, which is the national network with resources for anyone interested in starting or running or looking for help running memory cafes. We run that network, and there's just a ton of free resources. And I think I heard some of what's being discussed around transitions to virtual, hybrid. So we have a toolkit focused on that. So anybody who's doing social or creative arts engagement programs for older adults might find these toolkits useful, even if it's not work with people with dementia specifically. So I'll
let me tell you that I remember you presented in one of the very first groups that we had. Adam, you remember this when Beth did it? And that was 4 years ago. It feels like a lifetime ago.
Was it that long ago?
It was before COVID. And you had some wonderful resources, and it's amazing what you've done over there in Boston. And then
I'm lucky to Zoom. To get to just hear from people all over the country who are doing memory cafes, and to be sort of just a colander for catching what they're doing and kind of sifting it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because there's so much creativity, and I have to say the pandemic has sparked so many more creative adaptations.
Mm-hmm. Does anyone else do a memory cafe on this call? Or know what it is, because it's your job though, right? Memory cafe. That's what you do. You can't just parse it out. It's a big commitment, a memory cafe, correct? Or can you only do pieces of it?
Sure, there's all kinds of ways that they're handled. Usually they meet once a month, sometimes as frequently as once a week. Some of them are run in collaboration. So for example, libraries are a really popular setting and a really good setting for them. So I know of libraries that partner with a community service agency and run them together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like any initiative. It takes a lot of work in the planning and the startup, and to sort of get the word out, get your systems in place. And then once it's chugging along, mm-hmm. It's not as much time. From surveys I've done in the past, I estimate it's about, takes about 15 hours a month for somebody running a monthly cafe.
That's not
too on the high problem. End, yeah.
Can I ask a question? It's sort of related to memory cafes, but it was a question that someone else had raised in the chat related to the low vision or blind support group. And I think a challenge for us in Seattle for doing, like I've talked to Beth, it's like I'd love to do a memory cafe in Seattle. And we do have memory cafes, but I think the struggle is the Jewish, non-Jewish piece. And that's, I sort of have a question for all of these really specific groups of, we don't have the density of Jews often to do a Jewish specific group. And we also have, we have questions about if we're doing a group for the greater community, how does that work for our agency that's more Jewishly focused? So there's just not enough Jews to do like a Jewish low vision support group, or enough Jewish community members maybe to do a memory cafe. So then does that mean we should open it up to the greater community? And then what does that mean for the Jewish sort of flavor of the group if most of the participants are no longer Jewish. And so I'm just wondering, so really for all of these very specific programs that would be wonderful, we often struggle with trying to decide, can we make it a Jewish group? Is it a broader group? Then what does that mean for the Jewish participants? So I'm sort of babbling here, but the struggle of how to create these really specific groups in where there's not enough Jews to make a Jewish specific group, and how other agencies have dealt with that question when you're launching these smaller initiatives. Do you just open it up to the community? And how does that, again, it's a bigger struggle on the agency level, I would say, of just how Jewish we should be or how, you know, open we should be. But that's been a big struggle in trying to open some of these smaller, really interesting interventions of how to make them work.
My group, Low Vision, is 90% not Jewish. And in general, you know, except for the Holocaust, the group for our Holocaust survivors, there's not that much of a Jewish component to the group. During COVID, we did have a group that was specifically, you didn't have to be, but it was geared toward Jewish members because it talked about the rituals of that no one was able to have for burial, et cetera, because COVID, you know, was preventing that. But other than that, I don't feel like our groups are specifically gear. I mean, they may end up that way because just the pool of people we have in this area, we do have a lot of Jewish members, but in general, I don't feel like they're specifically only reaching out or serving Jewish members, or there's even a component that makes it for you need to be Jewish to understand something or relate. Would you agree, Eileen?
Yes.
Yeah,
I don't. Is that a conflict within your organization? This is just something at an organizational level we struggle with constantly. So I'm just wondering.
If you're talking about like funding,
right?
Like there is certain funding.
Part of that's almost secondary of like, do we go for funding? That makes sure, like that's like the whole question about how often do we go after government money? Because in that case, it's really hard to limit it to the Jewish community. So I think these are sort of bigger questions that just are constantly swirling around our organization. And sorry if I'm changing the subject a little bit, but it does impact our ability to do some of these smaller programs. And there's just a lot of struggle within the organization of how Jewish should we be? How open should we be? How do we keep a balance? Those kinds of things. And it's related to these smaller programs a lot.
I don't know how you don't keep a balance in the agency, these days. Like it's really important, I think, to reach out to the broader community so that you can fill your programs, but you're still reaching the Jewish community. How Jewish is a group for the blind, a supportive group for the blind, or any of these groups? Not really that Jewish. But I mean, I think that you can do it. You know, I guess you'd have to, I think you would be able to do it. I ran a small agency. We got funding from the Jewish community and a lot of our clients were not Jewish, but the Jewish clients their needs were being met, right? They just were being met with non-Jews.
I would say same to what Beth is saying here also as well, like, you know, very Tikkun Olam Jewish values. We help everybody. Most of our clients at the pantry and most of our clients, you know, in aging are not Jewish. It also opens us up. I think we're talking about this offline possibly to more grants. The more people you serve and the more diverse cohort of people you're serving, it opens you up to more grants. Also at the weekend that Lisa was referencing, they were talking about not only opening up your community in terms of diversity, people of color, mirroring the community, but also your board. There are more grants that you are considered for if your board is diverse. And I think that, you know, it also helps us as Jews to communicate, you know, our own diversity to multiple people, because we undo those myths. We undo those myths by collaborating with more folks. And it really, I think it's a way of fighting anti-Semitism as well. Like just kind of educating on that one-to-one level.
Mm-hmm. You know, I will say, Adam, in Cincinnati, we are closer to what you're describing. It's a constant conversation with our board and our funder, our Jewish funders. You know, typically how we've worked, how we address it is, you know, we tend to market mainly in the Jewish community. And if others come, they're more than welcome. We don't turn people away, but we don't do marketing typically in the non-Jewish community. And, you know, we have Jewish in our name, so people self-select. If they're comfortable coming, they're coming. Mm-hmm. And but it is something that's discussed a lot in the Cincinnati community.
Mm-hmm. I know that in Montreal, one of the ways that we are considering growing and surviving is because we are diversifying, and it's been years that we've offered it to everybody, not just the Jewish community. Our main funder is, of course, from Jewish funding, but we also have other grants that we reach out to both federally and provincially. A lot of the grants are really amazing for reaching out to other people. We have one now to reach the Francophone population in Quebec, and we're trying to reach out to the, there's another grant that we're going for that it's reaching out to minorities. So minorities can be English people in Quebec and French people outside of Quebec. So those are the people that are reaching to. Plus, we're really focusing with our new strategic plan on DEI. So with the DEI dossier, you're getting a lot of diversity from different cultures as well. We still maintain, I mean, you know, exercise is exercise for no matter whether or not you're Jewish. But for some of the programs that we have, they are more specifically with a Jewish component. So, for example, we have a lot of virtual travels. But the virtual travel, some of them, they focus on the history of the Jews in that country as they bring you around to sites that are significant to the Jewish people. So a lot of people join us, though, who are not Jewish. They're just interested in seeing the country and looking at the history. And some of the tours are like they're virtual tours, but you're actually walking with the person in the country. So it's a, you almost feel like you're there. So I think it's very important in order for us to be, to sustain ourselves and to be able to offer our population, our older adults, the services that they require, that we have diversified and open it up to other people as well. But, you know, we say proudly that, you know, we are a Jewish organization, but we are open up to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Can I circle back to a question back before for Brenda? You were talking about the Parkinson's groups. And I'm just curious, who teaches those? Who do you bring in therapists? Are you guys doing, who's doing like the adapted groups that are for physical disabilities?
So we have, there's a couple of different ones. We work with Parkinson's Canada. So Parkinson's Canada, they have social workers that they hire. And they do, for example, they do support groups. One is for the person who's living with Parkinson's, and the other one is for their caregivers. And they separate the two groups so that they can openly discuss their needs. The other ones for the physical well-being of the Parkinson's, it's we have kinesiologists. We have certified kinesiologists or people who are trained in personal training. Everyone has certification, and they're the ones who are working with people with Parkinson's. We also have internal workshops. So we just had a workshop for our new interns our students and our interns so that they are more comfortable working with people with Parkinson's and who's post-stroke, because it's not something necessarily that you learn as much as we can offer them when you're in kinesiology, for example. But we also have recreational therapists who specialize in working with people in adaptations as well. We have a music therapist who deals with people on the vocal part. She went also to a special training for people who have aphasia, who can't speak. But she works with them also with music therapy and singing, because one of the things with Parkinson's is that, you know, you start to lose the strength of your voice, which is really important to maintain your communication. So she does breathing exercises with them and vocal exercises as well with them. So those are some of the people that we have for the Parkinson's.
As for us, we have a much smaller team. The Parkinson's program is directed by an OT. We have a staff person who's a dance teacher, and he trained with Mark Morris Dance for Parkinson's, so he does the dance. And then we have a volunteer who's a conductor who leads the choral group along with the occupational therapist.
That's great.
I'm an occupational therapist, so that's why I was particularly interested. I'm the program manager of our senior resource network in Albany, and I do tend to get the rehab calls. You know, if someone's in the hospital or if someone had a stroke or someone has Parkinson's, I tend to address those, but we don't have any form. It just never occurred to me in this setting to offer something like that. It's a great idea. I mean, you know, I actually just spoke to the Parkinson's Association last week, to our local support group, which is huge. So they sort of have their own thing already going. So I don't know that it would be something that we would do, but we just actually got a grant for Albany City. So it has to take place with people who live in the city of Albany. But the part that I'm going to be working on is helping people age in place by doing home assessments. My area of expertise is modifying the home so that somebody can age in place. So part of what we're going to be doing, which I'll be, you know, we're just in the very, very beginning stage, but is planning a program so that we can go out and assess the person, see how they do walking through their home, and then what their needs would be to prevent falls and keep them in their home. So that's exciting.
It's too bad you live so far away, Linda, because we're actually, we have personal training in people's homes, and we've reached out to our McGill so that the OT students could possibly go on these home visits for the personal training and then help the people set up their homes properly as well. And we thought it would be a good way for the students to become experts more in that field, because not everybody has that experience as well. But we also work a lot with rehab centers, because here you have a certain amount of time that you can go to rehab, and then afterwards it's kind of like you're on your own.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So what they do is we go there, we present what we have. We also have a virtual library that we give access to them. So the therapist in the rehab can go onto our virtual library, mm-hmm. recommend which courses these people should take, that they can do it at home by themselves, and which courses they can take with us in the building. And that's usually OT that does the recommendation. And they send them to us. We can go back to them for questions if we have, but it's been something that's been very helpful for people who after rehab don't have anywhere else to go. So then they come to our services. So we're not rehab, we're post rehab.
Mm-hmm. So this is kind of exciting. In way before COVID, my agency, we started doing online support groups, right? So we did online support groups for people with ALS in one group, and then caregivers. And I should have invested in Zoom way back when, because there wasn't even Zoom when we were doing it. But when Zoom came along, it was 2 years after we were doing it with something called Video, which was the same platform that Google Hangouts did, which my friend right here in Fairlawn developed. So we got it for free. So we tried to promote this throughout all JFS agencies, and only one was interested, but it cost money for us to do it because it was very expensive. When Zoom, and ALS was one of our clients, right? The ALS National Foundation. And I knew that if you could work with ALS clients on Zoom. They can't, a lot of them couldn't talk. A lot of them couldn't use their hands, but we got them the eyesight stuff so they could look at the letters and they communicated that way. I mean, it was amazing. We all should have invested in that technology, because then Zoom came out and ALS called us and said, we don't need you to do it anymore. It's $14.95 a month, right? So then they ended up doing it. And look at us now. We can do anything with any kind of population. We worked with the chronically ill. We worked with single parents. This is just on Zoom. We work with, you know, very stressed out teenagers who are going to college. And it was very different, but you know, maybe you can do that now. Work with those populations on Zoom. Try to. So I was ahead of my time. That's the whole point of the story. And I didn't
invest. I support that point. I love that.
And I didn't invest. And I knew how great it was. It's like when I first saw Starbucks out in Seattle, I should have invested in that too. Anyway, and that was a long time ago. Let me tell you, Adam. Yes. Is that, Mindy, do you have something you want to say about this?
I was wondering, Brenda, could you talk more about the virtual travel? Because that's something that's been rolling around in my head to try to do with my group. I know you probably show photographs or slides or something, but I don't see why that couldn't be described. Like, how does that work?
So it is usually what we have is they're actually travel agents that we engage. And they bring us, either they have photos or slides, as you say, or they bring us on walking tours in certain areas where they talk about, they'll go into, let's say, a synagogue, and they'll talk about the history of the synagogue, and you see the synagogue like in real time. So there's, we have different kinds of travel tours, but what I can do, Mindy, is if you send me your email, I could invite you to a few free travel tours. They're not free, but I'll give them to you for free for some travel tours. So you could see what we're doing, because there's different ones that we have.
I'll put my email in the chat. Thank you. Sure. That would be great. It's something I've been thinking about, because that is something that they talk about, and we talk about. Some have traveled, some have not gotten over that. It's a fear. And we talked about before COVID even, you know, I gave them some resources. There are some travel agencies that are taking people and giving you a support person who's specially trained to go to any site, you know, wherever you are. And they were all over Europe, great places. Yeah, I thought good second job. And you describe all of these great sites to the person, but I can't find anything like that now. So I will add my email. Thanks.
You know what? I'm putting my email now. Anyone who's interested, you can just email me, and I'll have to see. I know we're kind of like winding down our season now, but we are going to be starting up again in September. So. Sure. I will keep everybody in mind, and I'll just write my email in the. Yeah. You can just send me an email if you're interested, and I will try to keep you on the list, and we'll send you the link.
So other things that agencies are doing in this kind of cross-sectional space, anybody doing anything with aging parents of people with disabilities, developmental disabilities?
I'll just add one thing that wasn't brought up. I also had people post-stroke and stuff like that at a facility that I worked with. We did crochet, because you can do it with one hand. We would tie the needle to the armrest where they had their hand, and then we included them in the knitting and stuff like that. So there was a lot of different programs that we used to do that were just adapted. And I think that that's always fun to include folks that way. And lots of karaoke, probably because we all had so much fun. Couldn't stop ourselves.
Anne, can you say more about the thing you just mentioned? Because we've had cases where there's like these crises where older adults are caring for someone with a developmental disability in their home who's been there many years, and then suddenly it's just a crisis because they aren't able to care for their adult child. Their adult child isn't able to live independently. So we've had cases like that, but no program. So I don't, do you know of something like that specifically geared toward that? Because that is certainly a need in the community.
I would say we've had the same experience, like a case by case experience. We just had somebody that was in hospice and had done no pre-planning at all for her adult child with disabilities. I will say in Ohio, the way funding runs for developmental disabilities, each county has a like an office on developmental disabilities, and they sponsored in our community, and I can't think of the name of it, but it was like future planning, basically. So it was centered on putting together a series of educational opportunities for these folks that needed to do planning for their adult children. And it was very well received, very well done. And both groups participated equally, the parents as well as the adult child with a disability and a developmental disability. And so it was well received. And so they really put together, they brought the aging experts in the community, our area agency on aging, agencies like ours, as well as the agencies that worked in DD as well, brought them together, created this curriculum, and then have repeated it a couple of times throughout the years for the parents and the adult child. So that it was focused on this idea of planning ahead.
Mm-hmm. Can you send out some sort of link about that or something?
Sure.
About
that? Mm-hmm. That's really good. That's good information. So Tatiana, in Edmonton, you asked something about assistive technology. Was that answered? Is that what you asked about?
Elenit, she said that they have a program for survivors with assistive technology, so we'll get in touch. But I don't know if anybody else uses their technology.
Lisa, do you remember the name of the program? They had a table there. I'm looking for it right now.
Recite Me?
They're buying the equipment for the Holocaust programs.
Oh, yes.
I'm looking for it right now. I'll find it for you, Tatiana, or I'll ask.
Yeah, that's okay. But I was wondering, if anybody else already uses something because at some point we were even considering buying robots for clients. You know, there is so much new technologies on the market and available, and sometimes clients able to pay, sometimes we can help them to access the different disabilities, either it's cognitive or mobility related to vision. So I'm curious if people already use something in their agencies and their programs.
Mm-hmm. It's Uniper that you guys are talking about, the Uniper program.
There wasn't something different? I thought we had another program that had that as well. But yeah, Uniper we've been working with for a while, but I thought
I'm familiar with them. That's for mostly for programming and kind of recreation, I guess.
Also, going back to the life plan, we actually have a life planning division of our agency in South Florida in West Palm. And we have somebody who runs I think she does a monthly or maybe every quarter. She does like learning, not like lunch and learns, but for lack of a better phrase. And she brings in attorneys. She brings in, you know, people to speak and to help with that planning. Because we also get a lot of, I get a lot of outreach visits that are, you know, this, the mom or dad is aging and they have a disabled, you know, son or daughter. So I'm actually doing an outreach next week for it, to go out there, and the, I'm going out for the daughter actually to help her. It's kind of reversed. The mom is actually working with my life planning person and has called for me to come out and try to help and get some support for the daughter who's in her 60s. So we also started, I know this is for, isn't necessarily older adults, but we started a LINCS program to help with our 55 and under who have disabilities to help them access some of the resources that are in the community as well. So if you go on the our JFS website, which is albertjfs.org, I'll put it in the chat. We have all of our, the different programs that we run, and our flyers for when we do have the like life planning programs. It'll tell you like the different ones that we've done and stuff like that. So that's what we have.
That seems like there's a lot there. You're doing a lot. At Albert, under the guidance of Elaine, Dr. Elaine Rotenberg. Okay, who else? Gulf Coast, you have to step up your game. You guys do so much.
I'm trying to unmute over here. Yeah, we do a whole lot, but we're really still suffering down here with staffing. So we've been hit or miss with our, you know, the things that we can normally commit to doing all the time, at least in our elder and disabled services department. So that's where we're at right now. But we do have our caregiver support group, but that's currently run by volunteers. We don't have that going with employees right now. Yeah, pretty much all the same. We've got the UNIFER program, which we've started doing at the beginning of COVID, and then we keep doing that for not just our elder services, but our JFS department and Holocaust. And we have that open to other survivors and anybody over the age of 60, basically.
So Christine brings up a good point, probably for all of these agencies about staffing, right? I don't know. It's hard to get staffing.
It's hard to keep
programs are suffering.
They are. Well, we try to do, I mean, we're doing the best that we can. Everything's not
complete. Of course.
It's just... You know, it's not what it could or should be at this exact moment in time, but we're doing what we can.
Yeah. So Alice, what did you say here? Is anyone running into seniors with autism?
Yeah, we've gotten a couple of calls. They come in through, you know, our general number, and it, once you dig a little bit deeper, they get routed to seniors because of their age. But there are people who somewhere in the conversation, it comes up that they're on the spectrum, you know, have some other kinds of issues. So they don't necessarily fit in really well with senior things. And they're usually on the older side for disabilities. We've had folks that right now, like we've got somebody in a caregiver group that she lost her partner, but her autism behaviors are making it difficult for her to fit in with the bereavement group. So that's just one that I don't know if we're seeing a spate of it or if that's something that other people are seeing as well and just wanting to hear if what people are doing about that.
Or is anyone seeing it? And is that impacting your groups? People who are potentially inappropriate because, right, is that what you're saying? Because they have a...
Yeah, well, it's kind of a case of, you know, typically we'd say, okay, you need to, let's get you hooked up with a counselor. And if you've got somebody that isn't going to benefit from insight-based counseling, it's hard to know then what's kind of the next step or what's a good fit for them.
Yeah. Has anyone experienced that? I know that we did at my job, and I would try to keep them in a group, but it became clear that they weren't able to even be in a group. It's not even that they weren't good for the group. They couldn't be in the group because they couldn't handle the conversation. Sorry.
Our closest to that is we have something called our Vital Support Center, and it's typically clients typically are, they do skew older, but they typically are people that cannot attend or haven't fit in at our Jewish community center, senior center. So they might have undiagnosed mental health or maybe diagnosed mental health issues. Some probably do, are undiagnosed on the spectrum, and they typically just have not fit in the groups that are happening, the senior center at the JCC. So we created what we call the Vital Support Center, and we do programming there regularly, probably once or twice a week. We did virtual during COVID. We celebrate the holidays together. So, you know, some folks that feel somewhat disenfranchised maybe from the rest of the Jewish community, it's located as co-located where our food pantry is, because a lot of these folks do have income issues as well and are in our care management program. So
and we have programs for like folks who are more, I would say, like persistent mental illness. Mm-hmm. So somebody, the folks with autism are going, well, no, that's not me. Mm-hmm. You know, so mm-hmm. it's hard to find enough of a group mm-hmm. To get to where there's some sense of community.
Mm-hmm. We are going to start venturing into a partnership with another Jewish organization so that we can start integrating people who are neurodiverse into the center. There is right now, it's not part of us, but it is in the center. There's a cafe, it's called Zara Cafe, and they employ people, everyone there is neurodiverse, and they prepare foods, and it's like a catering service that's available to the public. They're kosher food, and they package meals, or you can just buy a whole meal with them, or you can buy just cakes and desserts. So there's that. But we're also entering into a project soon where they will be accompanied by a worker so that it doesn't put the strain on our staff, and it makes other people feel comfortable that the worker's with them all the time. Mm-hmm. So that they can see what kind of, it's not really for participation in activities at this point. It's really more for jobs that they can do. But it's like a volunteer work as well. So, you know, maybe at one point they will be joining the groups, but it's to see what kind of opportunities we can give them. It's some will have mild cognitive needs, and the other ones will be neurodiverse.
That's a good term. Are people using that?
It is the right term.
That's the right term. It's a good, you know, it's actually a very good term. So,
yeah, because even people with autism, they don't necessarily go around saying I'm autistic. They say now that they're neurodiverse. Mm-hmm. Sorry, my phone.
I'll go around saying that too.
I think we're all a bit neurodiverse.
Everyone looks at Eileen Bernstein's the Zoom box. It looks like your hand is up. It looks like something like your hand is up. I don't know what that is in the back. Anyway, every time, well, now you can't see it. I guess it's a tree or paint. I don't know what it was. I kept on thinking that. Do you want to say something as we end, or should I end it now? Or do you want to say what's coming up next, Anne?
So July 12th, let me go back to my notes here. We are going to have Matthew Janicki, PhD. He's co-chair of the U.S. National Task Group on Intellectual Disabilities and Dementia Practices. So we're going to do a combined group with the NET group on disabilities. And that will be, the presentation is going to be an overview of Alzheimer's, dementia, or other cognitive decline impacting aging adults with intellectual disability. And I believe it's the 12th at noon, Lisa?
Yes, Eastern.
July 12th, Eastern time. Mm-hmm.
So wake up early, Adam. Get ready to go. Seattle over there. So anyone have any last thoughts? Thank you so much. So many people shared. That was great.
Sorry, what time is that on the 12th, Anne?
Noon Eastern time.
Noon. Okay.
And you'll get something shortly, but we didn't want to send it out and confuse you because we wanted this one to be over. Yeah, we're trying, okay? So is that it? Are we saying goodbye? Are we saying have a great summer? Because we only have a few months left and then it gets cold again. Anyway, good seeing you. Thank you, Brenda. Thank you, Anne. And I guess we'll all talk later.
Thank you.
Okay. Always a pleasure. Thank you, everybody, for coming.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.